From WNYC Studios, this is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. And this week, we've got my conversation with Glynn Washington, host of the radio show and podcast Snap Judgment. He describes it as storytelling with a beat. And as you'll hear, he is an amazing storyteller. Here's Glynn on his show talking about the time he ended up cooking curry in a restaurant in Malaysia. You see, his friend's mom ran the place, but one day she refused to cook anymore. She said her sons were lazy and needed to help her out. So Glynn got roped in.
We scoop some of the stuff out and start handing it out. The silence lasts maybe 80, 90 seconds. And then there's this horrified shouting. There's this spitting, the waving of the hands, finger pointing. I go ahead and taste my own concoction that has everybody so upset. And it is the nastiest, foulest mess I've ever put in my mouth. I have to scrub my own tongue with mango juice. It's terrible.
Glynn has also worked as an educator, United Nations advisor, and musician, among many, many other job titles. So let's get right to it. Our conversation was taped live on stage at the world's largest food festival, The Taste of Chicago.
Thank you, Dan. Great to be here.
Thanks for coming, Glynn.
Yeah.
So let's begin at the beginning. I know you were born in Detroit. Your family moved up to rural Michigan. Why?
Because that's where the cult was. And, you know, like a lot of people, some families shouldn't have alcohol. Some maybe they shouldn't have chocolate. We shouldn't have church. And we take it too far. So we had to go and join the cult and do what they said do.
And what was it like when you first arrived in rural Michigan? I mean, what was that transition like?
Lord have mercy. So the only black family for 200 miles. And I remember, like, they had, you know, kind of bribed us and set us up for this thing. I remember the first day of school when the bus comes. I got my little Trapper Keeper. I got my, you know, my Scooby-Doo lunchbox, and I'm ready, Jack. I'm ready. And the bus shows up, and it's this noisy, noisy school bus. And I get on, and it's silence. And I go to sit down, and somebody spits on the chair. And every single chair I go to sit in, they spit. And I get to the very back, and the bus driver's like, "Sit your behind down. Sit down. Sit down right now." I can't turn around. The bus is screaming. Everyone is shouting. I have one final chance. And there's a girl, and she's got her backpack on the seat. And she takes it off. And I sit down, and we go to school. It's my first day out in rural Michigan.
Did it get better?
Well, this is one of what happened. Want to know what really happened? This is what happened. They switched the bus route, and instead of being the last one on the bus, I was the first. And every day, I had gone to the back and sat next to this girl. Her name was Mary Jo. We never spoke. We never spoke every day, sitting next to her. And they switched it, and now I'm the first. I go, force of habit, I go right back there. I have the entire school bus to choose from. I go back there. But in rural Michigan, in the middle of winter, it gets extremely cold, like here. And when you are a poor farming family without insulation to your house, your pipes can freeze. And in that situation, you still have to do your chores. You still have to go clean the barn, get the chickens. You have to do all that. And that creates a filth on you. And you have a choice when it comes school time to get on the bus. Either you get on that bus stinking of your chores, or you spray some cheap cologne on to try to mask it. And that day, Mary Jo decided to go the spray route. And when she opened the door of the school bus, the kids screamed, "Get out, it's nasty, it's nasty, it's nasty," and they're yelling and shouting and pointing. And she looked back at me, and I looked down, I had had too much. I didn't want to do it. And she's walking back, going through the same gauntlet. They're screaming at her. They're screaming at her. And I have my backpack on this chair. And when she comes back and she looks at me, and I move it, and she sits down. And the shouting and yelling is going on. And for a while there, I didn't know what to do. I just wanted to apologize to her. And I didn't even know what to say. And finally I said, my name's Glenn. And she's like, I know your name. And we just started talking, and all of the other craziness went away. And it was, just two little kids in the back of the bus.
And, you said only black family for hundreds of miles. Were there, differences in food culture that played out in ways there when you were growing up?
It's funny, actually. Yeah, I grew eating the stuff that black people eat. It's funny, actually, though, just recently. And, you don't know what these demarcation lines really are anymore. Because we grew up, I was in church culture. Church culture, church food culture is a casserole culture. You got to get your tuna fish casserole, cream corn, and these. I can't barely say these things right now without wanting to put a finger into my throat. But I went to a friend's 30th wedding anniversary, and I was sitting there, and it's some dear friends of ours, but in a largely Caucasian setting. But across from us was a Filipino group. And they kind of look at me kind of, surreptitiously, and they slid the bottle of hot sauce over to us. And it kind of went around. All the brown folks did one of these numbers. All the brown folks emptied the hot sauce bottle, and we snuck it back away. It was making this our own. I think that happened a lot in those communities. I just say somebody always had a bottle of hot sauce at the ready.
Coming up, my conversation with Glenn Washington continues. He'll tell a really amazing story about living in Japan as a young man, learning to drink tea, and almost eating something that he definitely was not supposed to eat. Stick around. You ever wonder whether fancy salt is worth the money? You ever worry maybe you're eating too much salt? The FDA just put out new regulations for salt, but what do they mean? I mean, is all our food going to be as bland as supermarket tofu now? You can get the answers to these questions and a lot more when you check out Gastropod. It's a podcast about the science and history of food. It's hosted by my friends Cynthia and Nikki, and they just put up a really great special episode all about salt, and I hope you'll check it out. You'll learn about everything from the role that salt played in Mahatma Gandhi's struggle for Indian independence to the scientific debate over sodium and heart disease. Again, the show is called Gastropod. Get it today at gastropod.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC Studios. I'm Dan Pashman. Before we get back to my conversation with Glenn Washington, let's listen to him tell a story on his show, Snap Judgment.
Okay, so I'm proud to let people know that for my first job at a steakhouse, I rose through the ranks of the organization at top speed. Sure. I started off as a dishwasher, all the while. I had my sights set on one thing, the highest position I could attain, line cook. And finally, one day, I got my big chance. Chris said he needed to go to Detroit to see his girlfriend and wondered if maybe I could take over. I'm ready, Chris. Don't worry about a thing. And you might think, the biggest thing about cooking steaks in a steakhouse is cooking steaks, right? Wrong. Now, the biggest thing about heading up the army of workers dedicated to delivering your steak dinner is deciding exactly how many steaks to pull out of the freezer. Because the steaks gotta thaw. And you can't get to the end of the night without enough steaks. But you can't pull too many or the manager will have your behind in a sling for food waste. Early evening, you got to make the call, and it's going to determine the fate of the whole shift. It better be right. So we huddle. All right. Are there any big games going on? How about church meetings? I got to get this right, people. Don't hold back on me. I need to know what's going on in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I need to know right now. And finally, I made my call. Pulled my steaks from the freezer and got to work. I was flying. Wasn't going to mess this up. Medium rare. He wants his extra, extra well done. Charcoal style, people. Charcoal style. And we were getting to right around close, and all the steaks were going away. Perfect. 5 minutes before close, everything was cool. 1 minute before close, no more steak. Congrats, y'all, we did it. Then I saw one more family come through the line. Oh, it was the senior regional manager. The dude whose name was on my paychecks. The dude with the crazy temper. The dude who likes to make people cry. He gave his order, and I saw the despair in the line staff. We don't have any more steaks pulled. He just ordered 4 of them. Leadership time. I had to take control. Stay here. Look happy. I went back to the freezer. I pulled 4 steaks. They were each as hard as bricks. I told the dishwasher to go take a break. The instant he ran out of the door, I pushed the steaks inside the industrial dishwasher and waited for them to come out the other side. 90 seconds later, the first one popped out, sparkling clean, dripping wet, and thawed. The other 3 quickly followed. Where did you hide those? They were in my just-in-case drawer. I cooked them up, medium rare. Garnished them with sprigs of parsley. And we all watched as the server brought the dishes out. It was just a few minutes later when the server said the regional manager wanted to speak with me right away. Uh-oh. I wiped down my apron, adjusted my chef's hat, walked into the dining room till I was standing right in front of Mr. Screamer himself. Sir, you wanted to see me? Yeah. Did you cook this? Yes, sir, I did. But I just wanted to tell you, this was one fantastic steak. Well, I am very, very glad you enjoyed it. Just doing my job.
You don't drink coffee.
No.
You seem like a man with a lot of energy. If I didn't have coffee, I would be sleeping right now. How do you survive 2 kids, busy job, without caffeine, without coffee, Glenn? You need coffee.
Well, you know, Dan, I have my caffeine. I certainly have my vices, but when I first moved to Japan, very, very rural Japan, and again, I was one of the only foreigners from miles, and I went to a grocery store, and these group of older women, they followed me around, laughed. I'm trying to, you know, it's rural Japan. I'm trying to get something. And at one point, I get some, I don't know what anything is. And I grab a box of crackers and a woman starts shouting at me. Starts shouting, Waman! And I'm like, what's Waman? And finally, I'm like, I'm through with these crazy people and I go home, right? And I'm sitting there, I'm going through my little groceries and there's a knock on my door. It's one of these older women who comes rushing in my house and she goes to my groceries and she takes out my box of crackers and she starts shouting again, Waman, what are you doing? What are you doing? And she points at it and there's a picture of a dog. And I'm realizing, oh, this is dog food. Good looking out, right? I appreciate you doing that, right? And she comes back the next day. This time she's got a dictionary. And she says, look at here. You got to learn the soul of Japan. Oh, what's that? What's that? And she says it's in the tea. And she's going to teach me how to make tea. It's a tea ceremony situation. And this is a strange lady, and I don't really want to do this. But she grabs me. You don't touch people in Japan. She grabs me by my shirt, and she pulls me down the street to her beautiful house. And I know that if I go inside, my life is going to change. And I don't want to do that yet. But, you know, what did you go to Japan for anyway? So I go there, and it begins this crazy military instruction several hours a day. First, you got to sit just right. And she comes, she's got the tea, and I go to drink it. No! Drink tea. First, you got to pour the water in, and put the powder in, and you got to turn the cup just right. You got to say this old, archaic, Shakespearean-level Japanese. You got to hold it to the sky, and if you're lucky and she says, gives you the nod, then and only then do you maybe give it a little drink, a little sip, before you put it back down again and wait for instruction. Again and again, for hours and hours, she taught me day after day. Dame! Nanioro! Like, why are you such an idiot every single day? Bakayaro Grinchon. And finally, you know, I got it. I kind of got it a little bit. You know, I got my little tea ceremony thing on. And there was a fair. And I went down to this fair, and she told me to go and sit down next to these old guys around a table. And the first thing I did was put out some tea. And I know this is a little test, you know, so I'm doing my thing. I got my little turn, my nod, my pour. I'm doing my thing. And when they give me the final nod, I leave. And then the next day she comes, and there's a scroll. And in this scroll, there's a list of tea ceremony masters. And for the first time ever, they put in the name in Roman letters, Gren. And I was like, yeah, yeah, right? But no, there was to be no applauding from her. I was still apprentice on this thing. But when my time, my year in Japan was up, and I went to go leave. And like I said, it's a very formal thing. And she came when I was getting on the cab, and she came and she bowed to me, which is, again, against all etiquette. And I have to bow. I bow lower. She's been my teacher. She bows lower, so I go down to the ground. And it's occurring to me how much I've learned, how much I've become a part of this. She's become a part of my life. And I say, look, you know, I have been as Japanese as I can be. I really have. I've done everything I can do. But I'm from Michigan. I'm from the Midwest. And in the Midwest, I have to give you a big old-fashioned Michigan hug right now. And she says, no! And she runs away, top speed. But I'm stronger and faster than she. And I catch her, and she screams, and she laughs. And I told her I'd never forget. I told her, thank you for everything. And I told her, Dan, that I would never drink coffee, but I would always drink tea.
And have you kept that promise?
I have.
And do you still go through the same ritual when you drink tea here?
I don't. No, this is funny. This is funny, actually. I went to India last year, and it's crazy. I was in the middle of rural Rajasthan, and these bad girls, they thought it was funny. They took me, and they said, you got to meet my grandmother. You got to meet my grandmother. So they took me into this past this warren, and they put in their house, very, very, you know, basic, and poor, these mud huts, and they take me back there, and there's an older woman, and she's messing around a fire, and she's doing something, and they turn around and say, look! And she sees me, and she screams, why am I in her house? And I was like, I'm sorry. She said, no, I'm sorry. You just frightened me. Sit down, I'll make you some tea. I'm like, cool. And she gets the coriander, the cream, the tea leaves, the sugar, and she's doing this whole thing, and she makes this tea, and it smells wonderful. And she's like, here, have you ever had chai before? I was like, yes, I've had chai. And she's like, well, how do you make it in the States? I was like, well, we open a box, we pour it, we pour it in. And this woman in this clay hut looked at me with such pity, like, you poor, poor man. This is, I feel really, really bad for you. Enjoy at least this as a gift from India to you.
Was it as good as it sounds?
Oh, man. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'm still, like, it just.
It's interesting, though, that, like, I don't know, it seems like you like to be a fish out of water.
Yeah. I like pushing it a little bit. I think that's where something interesting is going to happen. Yeah.
Does that come from being the only black family for 200 miles?
I'm against that. don't never do that again. I just think that my natural inclination is actually, if you left me alone to my own desires, I would be in a room with some tea reading The Hobbit for the 150th time. That's what, if you just left me alone. But that's no way to live a life. That's no way to do things. And I found that whenever I go ahead and just, okay, get, you know, put down the well-worn novel, put down the tea and go and engage something, it's always, I've never, ever regretted it.
Well, Glenn Washington is the host and executive producer of Snap Judgment. It's heard on over 400 public radio stations across the country, including right here on Chicago's own WBEZ.
Love BEZ.
That's right. It's also available as a podcast, so wherever you are, please make sure you check out Snap Judgment.
Subscribe today.
Subscribe appreciate on iTunes. It. Big hand for Glenn Washington.
Thank you very much, Dan. I appreciate it. Love the show.
Next week on the show, you know, beer is not just for football-loving bros anymore, okay, people? We'll talk with beer-loving women who are breaking down stereotypes in the worlds of home brewing, beer blogging, and most importantly, beer drinking. That's next week. Quick note for those of you in the New York area, we're doing a live taping of The Sporkful this Saturday at Taste Talks in Brooklyn. My guests will be Chef Amanda Cohen of Dirt Candy and Chef Sohee Kim of INSA and The Good Fork. Get tickets at tastetalks.com. This show is a production of WNYC Studios and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani and me. Editing help from Shoshana Gold. Engineering help from Ed Silla. Music help from Black Label Music. Special thanks to Paula Schumann and to everyone at The Taste of Chicago, especially Michelle Boone, Mary Slowick, and Jasmine Hawkins. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Shelby Withers from Lexington, Kentucky, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.